Hi, Doctor.
Hi, Dad.
Have I ever told you that in my next life I want to be an evolutionary biologist?
No, but I kind of got the idea because you like to start a lot of podcasts with the evolutionary thoughts around certain things that go on.
Right. Well, I'm fascinated by how the connection between how we've evolved and the mismatch of how we've evolved and our current environment kind of makes it so much more challenging for us in so many more ways. You know, not that we'd want to go back to a hunter-gatherer lifestyle that we had for eons, which you know, kind of forged our genetic makeup through a process of, you know, as Darwin kind of laid out, the process of, you know, survival of the fittest, or I forget what the proper name for it is, but that's essentially what it is, that, you know, that species, including humans, adapted to their environments through a series of kind of random mutations. And the mutations that were advantageous stuck.
Yep, right.
Because those creatures were more able to pass along their, you know, their genes.
Right.
It takes
such a long time for evolution in anything to happen. Like, it takes an unbelievable amount of. Well, I guess it depends on the life cycle, right? So you can study this in what they used to use, or like fruit flies, or even still do, because the life cycle is so short. But if we're looking at evolution in humans, to have our genes, to have evolution play out in humans, it takes a long, long time. So that's why you see, like, what worked for us then doesn't work for us now. But, and then by the time it catches up, who knows what,
right.
what kind of environment we'll be in next.
Well, and that's the thing, is the pace of genetic adaptation is, as you've said, so much slower than the than the pace of environmental change.
Mm-hmm.
So,
right.
In the past, call it 200 years now, but really closer to 100, our lifestyles have dramatically.
Yep.
Dramatically changed in a number of ways, and we're kind of get into them, and the reason that this is such a interesting subject for me is I think that, you know, in order to be able to deal with these mismatches between our genetic makeup and our current environment, you first got to understand the challenge.
Yep.
You know, so that's why I'm calling this podcast "Know Thy Enemy," because you first, you know, in order to win the war, you first need to understand that you're in a war, and what that adversary is. So let's take some examples of this war. So in terms of diet. You know, certainly our ancestors weren't chowing down on Doritos and Cokes and what have you. You know,
no.
what typical hunter-gatherer diet would be what?
It would be berries, and then, like, you know, the animals they hunt whenever they get lucky. And I don't know, whatever else is growing on the land.
Right, nuts and
Yeah.
fruits, and, you know, obviously complex carbs.
Yeah. Whole foods, obviously.
Right. So there's two things about diet. One is it, you know, so it was not processed.
Yeah.
And it was intermittent.
Yeah.
You know, you couldn't go down to your grocery store.
You didn't have constant food available to you 24/7, 365.
Right. So what did that mean in terms of bodily adaptations? So for one thing, you know, we evolved to crave calorically dense food, like when it was available, when we you killed a I don't know a what do they call those things, a mammoth elephant, an agent, you chowed down. You didn't say, eh, I'll wait, let you guys get your fill, and if there's something left for me, I'll, I'll nibble on a bone or whatever. And if you came across like a beehive with lots of honey, you didn't say, I'm gonna pass on that. I'll get some berries when later in the day. Because those people who did, those people who didn't have that craving to immediately consume that food when, the famine hit, which it inevitably did, they died of starvation. So for one thing, we're bred to crave high calorie foods, and then we are also made to store excess energy as fat and only give it up very sparingly. So explain that little kind of biochemistry behind that, because it gets into like blood sugar and insulin and what have you.
I mean, biochemistry, like on the cellular level, I don't think anyone wants to know that. Nor do I know that I remember the specific
No,
biochemistry.
not don't get into the Krebs cycle. Please,
Okay.
we'll stop short of that. This is not an organic chem
So you needed to give me a
test.
heads up that you're gonna
Yeah.
ask
No, I'm talking about, so the process of, you eat a bunch of apples and what have you. Let's say they're ripe. So in a, it as opposed to someone these days drinking a glass of apple juice.
Sure. So, and that's why we don't prefer, the apple juice. We prefer the whole apple because when you're eating an apple, your body has to one, break it down to some degree. So it's going to be released slower than if you are just drinking a glass of apple juice, which is broken down already into sugar. And then you also get like the fiber of the skin of the apple. And good fiber is only, net positive, but it also slows the release of the blood sugar into the bloodstream. So it gets released slower, a little bit more like a complex carb, but it's just a better way to metabolize this stuff. And then your body's not inundated with the need for so much insulin at one time, like you would be if you just drank a big glass of apple juice, because you drink a big glass of apple juice and that sugar is into your bloodstream so quickly that your pancreas needs to pump out insulin. And too much insulin too fast, down the line leads to insulin resistance, but it's kind of like an onslaught to the body, that it has to take care of all of this stuff. Whereas digesting things slower, so even like sweet potatoes or other complex carbs like oats, whole oats, all that kind of stuff, your body has to work to break it down first. So it gets digested as a complex carbohydrate, and it's just more effectively utilized by the body. And then if you take in too much, it's gonna store excess as fat, which again, in the hunter-gatherer days is good because you need more fat on your body, for the times where food is scarce, but we don't really have scarce times anymore. Or at least most of us, fortunately, don't. So it's not like you're then going to burn that fat the next couple of weeks when food's not around. Generally speaking, food is always readily available. So we're just storing excess as fat without having that period of burning it.
And speaking of the burning piece, the other obviously big difference is in terms of physical activity that a hunter-gatherers had to, kind of. And I've read stuff it's about hunter-gatherers actually didn't work all day long to get their food, but they were at it because you can view these tribes that in various parts of the world that are still in that hunter-gatherer stage, and they work like 5 or 6 hours a day. So it sounds like, oh, not too bad. But during that 5 or 6 hours, they're working, like.
They're not, and then in the time that they're not working, they're still often on their feet and moving around. They're not sitting in front of their computer or their TV.
So we would just, we would just evolve to move. And the other piece of that is that it in with relatively sedentary lives comes less muscle mass, which also plays into that insulin kind of factor, because the biggest kind of sink for your blood sugar is within your muscles. Because when it's converted into not it's converted into, is it glucagon? It's converted into glucose, gets converted into whatever this it's glucagon is stored in the muscles for future fuel. So if you're if you have decreased muscle mass, then you just have decreased storage capacity and are more vulnerable to those spikes in glucose, which then get you into that spike in insulin and vicious circle.
Yeah, the muscle's just much more metabolically active. It just takes more glucose to exist. So when you have more of that, you have more places to spread that blood sugar out versus not much muscle, more body fat. It's just gonna, again, you're gonna end up storing it instead.
So you take those two things, the differences in diet, differences in physical activity, and I feel like the message for me is you've got to really be like radical in order to be healthy, given the enemy, which is this mismatch between our genes and our environment,
Yeah, I wouldn't say radical. I mean, because we've seen
Radical in terms of well, I guess radical as relative to, let's say, if you're just kind of laissez-faire about it,
you have to be
you're doomed, I
there. You have
think.
to do it in a you have to be very cognizant. You have to be very intentional with it. You because if you just live by the environment, then you're going to sit all the time and you're going to eat crap. Yes, period. But most people don't feel great doing that. Most people don't love how they look, you know, when you're not treating yourself and your body right. So there's obviously other drives, even outside of your physical health, to get to avoid that kind of thing. But I think just being intentional, not necessarily radical, but if we're
Yeah, maybe
committed.
radical was the wrong terminology, but I'm trying to think of an analogy. Maybe this works. It's kind of like, okay, I'm gonna go for a hike and I'm gonna climb during that hike. It helps me to understand if this hike is gonna be up a mountain and I'm gonna hike up 2,500 vertical feet versus I think I'm hiking up a hill of 250 vertical feet. It's like I think that knowing the challenge at least sets you up to understand what sort of effort it's going to take in order to be healthy, given the again given the extent of the challenge. Because I think I know that some people in my orbit, so to speak, have like commented on the fact that I seem overly focused on fitness and nutrition, like a little bit obsessive, which, I may be, but my re retort to that is, well, that is what's required in order, given the environment.
I don't think you're obsessive. I know people who are obsessive with their lifestyle, and I would not put you in that category. Now it's all relative. So if you're talking to someone who gives it no thought, then you might seem radical.
True. True.
But yeah.
Then, but it's not just physical activity and diet that where we see this mismatch. I'll give you another one, which is a challenge for me, sleep patterns. Our ancestors, this is interesting. I assume you've heard this, that our ancient ancestors had what's called the biphasic sleep patterns. So two sleep periods per day or per night, with and very much, exposed to and kind of rotating around natural daylight cycles.
Yeah, which
And
is
we
strange
just
because if we do have to follow, the circadian rhythm of light and dark. That's kind of how we technically are supposed to sleep. Is with our body following the light and day and all that. So, when were they supposedly having their? Obviously, they're sleeping at some point in time at night, but when were ancestors sleeping? When was their second cycle? During the
Well,
daytime, or was it just?
no, at night. So as I understand it, the first cycle was when the sun went down, not too long after, because if
Okay.
you don't have electricity, then all you've got is firelight. So it's natural. But so then, let's say that's, I don't know, 8 o'clock at night. So you're going to sleep for phase one, and that's a 5 hour stage, let's say.
Okay.
And then you're awake from 1 to 3 or 4, and
Yep.
then you're asleep for another 3 hours, and you're up for the day around 7.
Yep.
So
Interesting.
very different than ours. But I tell you, so obviously the older I get, I have to get up in the middle of the night to go to the bathroom,
Yep.
and that's usually somewhere between, if I go to bed, go to sleep around pretty early still, around 10 ish. Usually get up around 2, 3, or whatever. And it is often a challenge to get back to sleep. Like,
Yep.
my body wants to be biphasic.
Yep.
But my lifestyle does, if
But you
I
can't
was
go to bed
awake,
at 8. Yep.
I'd have to go to bed at 8, or, and
You get up
so,
really early too, I think.
well, so do you. We're both
Well,
5 a.m.
you're. Yeah.
is typical,
Yep.
hopefully. It all depends on that, what the it all depends on that middle piece of the night, if I can get
Right.
back to sleep or not. If I
Yeah.
can't, then it's a real problem. But another area where we are very different from our ancestors is stress in general. So our ancestors faced very acute stressors, do we have enough food to eat? Will we be able to kill this animal so we've got enough food to eat? Will this animal kill us? That type of thing. Whereas our stress is typically not life-threatening.
Right. But it's
Or
chronic every day. Yes.
exactly, chronic, low-level, everyday stress
Yep.
that. What's the stress hormone again?
Cortisol.
Cortisol. So cortisol actually is good for you
In short
if
bursts.
in short bursts. Yes. Definitely not good for you
Yep.
on
Long
a,
term, low level.
you got it. You got it. And our just modern society is just kind of so
Well, it's interesting when I talk to
structured.
patients and, stress is a big thing. Stress keeps them up at night. Most people's stress revolves around their job.
And income and finances.
Yeah, but even if it's not, to even take, even independent of finances, it's still work stress.
Work stress. Yep.
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 It's
The
always work stress, always. So then it's like where I have a conversation of, obviously I'll have to work, I'll have to make, money. You want to live a certain lifestyle, all that kind of stuff. But at what point are you giving too much to work and at the expense of your health and longevity and whatever? Because I always say, with the exception of a very few people, your job can replace you and will replace you pretty quickly if you cease to exist tomorrow.
Right.
So
Well,
think about
and
how much stress you're giving it, because
do you talk to your patients about like meditation and mindfulness?
yeah, but that's easier said than done in practice. You know what I mean? Like we talk about stress relief and all that kind of stuff, but a big part of it comes down to how workplaces just need to change the environment that employees are in, because no longer, I'll say, like, I don't understand how we functioned when, or think about how we must have functioned pre cell phone and internet. You literally left work at work. Like, you couldn't do anything else.
Right.
And that wasn't that long ago when we didn't have cell phones, smartphones, internet, email. Like, imagine, like, you couldn't answer an email. Like, now we're working technically, a lot of people, 24/7. You know,
I think there's a little bit of a backlash to that. You know, people understand the downsides, and there's corporations, certainly the bigger ones, are a little more at least likely to give lip service to work-life balance. But you're seeing it on the front lines that it's still an issue.
It's a bunch of, and I remember work-life balance, like mindfulness and whatever, when I was an employed physician, and it was like, okay, to curb physician burnout, we're going to implement a walk once a week during your lunch hour. And it's like, hey, guess what? I don't want to walk during my lunch hour because that's my time to like catch up on charts and stuff like that. So now you're imposing a necessary activity. You know what I mean? Like, this is the opposite of helping with burnout. I just think that we are now expectations. And even if it's not expected, just the fact that it's there at your fingertips, people are working 24/7.
I still, To some extent, you know, some of that's out of our control, unfortunately. Some of it is, and I don't believe that.
Well, it kind of seems like what it's allowed for is people are now doing the job of multiple people. Like I see people who are doing things, and I was like, well, I have to work this month, or I have to answer these emails, you know, until I go to bed, or I have to do X, Y, Z. And it's like, well, it sounds like it's just understaffed, or it sounds like you're doing the work of three people. You know what I mean? So while I agree with some of it, it's out of our control, it seems like it's just allowed a lot of employers to kind of take advantage of people when, because again, everything's for profit, right? So everything's about bottom line. And it's like, maybe we should hire a couple more people to do this job. So this person's
You know what the savior is going to be? AI.
Yeah. No, except then people are going to lose their jobs.
Then that causes another problem. I know.
Yeah.
I hear you.
Yeah.
Kind of related to what we're just talking about, social connections are very different in our modern environment. You know, our ancestors had essentially a small tribe of maybe 50 to 75 or what have you, types of people. Everyone knew everybody. There was like very much communal raising of children and communal hunting and all of these things. And so within us is therefore a very strong need for communal contact.
And we have less and less of this now.
Exactly. Yep. Because if you were ostracized by your tribe, you were dead.
Yeah.
In hunter-gatherer society. So, the ability to be socially acceptable was very strong. And again, social connections were absolutely critical. But you know, you could, on the one hand, argue that, well, we have Facebook now, or Instagram, or, texting, or whatever. But there's something about two things, face-to-face interactions that is fundamentally different than digital ones. And there's something different about the, you know, living in a communal type of environment that is different than, obviously, what our current situation is. It plays out in kind of our emotional kind of well-being. But again, I think there, if you understand that, you're more able to deal with it. I know this, for me, what this understanding does is make me more diligent in connecting with family and friends. I was just telling you, I went on a hiking trip with high school buddies, which, you know, 10 years ago, I wouldn't have prioritized to my own detriment
Right.
now.
Yep. Oh,
But
yeah. Absolutely. You have to be proactive and, do things that you initially don't necessarily want to do or think you have time for, but then you always end up happy that you did it.
absolutely, absolutely. The last thing, and because I know you've got to run, is just the environment we live in and how that affects our sensory stimulation.
Yeah.
So you can think about our hunter-gatherers lived in nature, and there's, study after study has proven the benefits of being out in nature.
Yeah.
And there's no kind of doubt about why that is versus, for us now to be out in nature, it's a special occasion.
Yep, exactly.
It's like go to the
That
park.
and then also on the list was the environmental toxins, which I think are proving recently to
Oh,
be a
yeah.
bigger and bigger and bigger thing as we learn more information about forever chemicals and microplastics and all of that kind of stuff that, makes our world easier. But then now fast forward, because who would have thought, microwaving something in your plastic to-go container was bad. Oh, well, now we know maybe it was bad and we've been doing it for decades and now we're seeing rising, incidences and cancers and all that kind of
Well,
stuff.
the other thing on you talk about microplastics. I just read something within the past couple of weeks that when they analyze the coronary artery plaques in people, they're like 50% microplastics. It's
That's
like
crazy. Yeah.
it's a ridiculous, yeah, it was like a ridiculous number. It's like almost like without microplastics, you might not have heart disease or whatever. I know that's not the case, but
Yeah.
oh my God.
I know it's scary. You don't know what you don't know, and then you learn. And yeah, there's lots of
So,
examples of that in medicine, but it's in a completely different world. So exposures are wildly different.
yeah. Well, know thy enemy. That's
Yep.
my kind of mantra for the week,
Yep.
month, year, whatever. Cool. Well, thanks for fitting this in to your busy schedule. Get back and treating your patients with the love and care. I know that you give them. So.
Will do.
Okay, ciao.
All
Love you.
right. Love you.
Bye.
Bye.
Thanks again for listening. You can visit thedoctorandad.com, that's spelled thedrandad.com, for show notes to any of our podcasts, as well as other useful info on extending health span. Now the legal disclaimer. This podcast is for informational purposes only and does not constitute the practice of medicine, nursing, or other professional healthcare services, including the giving of medical advice. And no doctor-patient relationship is formed. Use of this information and show notes is at the user's own risk. The content of this podcast is not meant to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Listeners should not disregard or delay taking medical advice or treatment for any medical condition they may have and should seek the assistance of their medical professional for any such conditions. We also want you to know that we take no funding from any product or service that may be mentioned on the Doctor and Dad podcast.